is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud.
He's impeached forever, no matter what he says or whatever headlines he wants to carry around. You're impeached forever. You're never getting rid of that scar. History will always record that you were impeached for undermining the security of our country, jeopardizing the integrity of our elections, and violating the Constitution of the United States.
Well, when you hear the impeached forever, the audio clip I just played of Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, mind you, she says, you're never getting rid of that scar. History will always record that you were impeached. Ava Armstrong, what do you think about, you hear the Speaker up front there and what she's saying about calling it a scar, actually?
I think she's digging herself a deeper hole every time she talks about this and every time she just spews her hatred for President Trump publicly, mind you. This will not remain forever on his record. It will be expunged and we will move on from it. She's just disgusting.
All right, Ron Edwards, when you hear the comment about you're never getting rid of that scar, it sounds to me like the Speaker was potentially doing this to get even, to get back at the president. I mean, if you really look at these comments and you dig deep here and what she's saying psychologically, it sounds to me like she's saying her real ambition was to mark the president up, knowing that he would never really be impeached, but to really scar him as the best she could. Is that what you get out of it?
That's exactly what I get out of it. That has been their mission all along. It wasn't about impeachment, as her lying lips said. It was to destroy his image and hopefully that in their addled brains, that the American people would follow them down their idiotic trail. But it worked in reverse. And, to quote Steve Martin in the movie called It's Complicated, bring it on. And it's going to backfire on them and they shall be wiped out of the House as far as running the House this coming November.
Well, she's clearly ran the table. Dr. Ron Martinelli, if this was a poker game, I mean, she played all her chips. It seems to be that way anyways. But again, I think there's something deeper here within the personalities of these people, but exactly what they're up to. When you look at what they're saying, and I don't hear a lot of people talking about this, Dr. Ron, and you in a background in psychology, you can understand what I'm speaking about here. What do you think that she's really up to here?
Well, first of all, both people don't like each other, intensely don't like each other. So that's number one. So once you take that off the table, and that's understandable on both sides, then what you have to do is compare and contrast what Nancy Pelosi's saying versus what is the reality. And unless you're a total Kool-Aid drinker, pretty much everything she says is way blown out of proportion or completely inaccurate. To me, I agree with Ron Edwards and also Ava in that the Democrats know that they have very, very weak candidates going into this election. And from the get-go, they have been scared about Trump and his administration's accomplishments. And this is all about trying to belittle the president, trying to remove his accomplishments in the eyes of Americans, and try to help their Democratic candidates.
One of the quotes from Representative Al Green, who was actually the first Democrat to call for impeachment, believe it or not, he said, I do believe it would be a mistake for him to think that he can now simply disregard all the laws we have in this country. And I keep hearing a lot about this being an unlawful president. Listen to this very quick clip here on the Speaker, where she talks about shredding the State of the Union.
That was not a State of the Union. That was his state of mind. We want a State of the Union. Where are we? Where are we going? And the rest. Not let me just show you how many guests I can draw. I feel very liberated. I feel very liberated. I feel that I have extended every possible courtesy. I've shown every level of respect. He has shredded the truth in his speech. He's shredding the Constitution in his conduct. I shredded his State of His Mind address.
So, Dr. Ron, you hear what I just played there. And she says here, I feel very liberated. I've extended every possible courtesy. I've shown every level of respect. He shredded the truth in his speech. He shredded the Constitution in his conduct. I shredded his state of mind address. Well, I got to tell you, this is really a war of words. This brings you back to actually the early days where they used to beat each other up, where the framers were when they tried to, not that I was here or you were here at the time, Dr. Ron, but I mean, it does remind you sort of when there was real vitriol there and they just had a, I really wonder if this is any different than what history, where we seem to think it is because we haven't seen a lot of this in modern times, but isn't this how we started this republic really? Dr. Ron?
Well, yeah, and compare and contrast what used to happen in the very old days of the founding fathers. In those days, if they had a disagreement, they went out and they had a duel, okay?
Exactly.
Alexander Hamilton style, right? So, they used to yell and scream, and they used to do all of this stuff. The only thing.
So why are we so surprised when we hear that today, Dr. Ron? Why?
I think that people just don't have any sense of history. They don't teach history and civics in school anymore, unfortunately. So people have no context. And of course, we have 24/7 streaming, so we can see everything they do. But actually, in the old days, they used to come to fisticuffs.
Right. And, you know, you bring up technology and communications, which has certainly bridged the divide of our communications and technology over the last couple of hundred years, for sure. Ron Edwards, but I think there's something to this that is very interesting to me, because I don't know, we seem to be like, oh my God, I can't believe she said that, or, you know, what's the matter with it? But really, this is kind of part of our history here, is we beat the hell out of each other. But I think the difference probably is, Ron, is we usually come back to the table, and at some point, civility does become the order of the day, but we're not seeing that here, are we?
Well, what we have today is an era of wimpus Americanus apologeticus, and mixed in with political correctness. Forgive me for forgetting his name, but there was a Democrat who walked into the House of Representatives and beat a man nearly to death over the issue of slavery. And what you have today is political slavery against liberty. That's the battle that's going on today. And that is why the Democrats, just like the Democrats of old, mm-hmm. would be willing to beat you to death and lie over the issue of slavery. Today's modern day slavery promoters, through regulations and other means, are trying to destroy people like a Donald Trump, who are trying to free this country from the shackles of modern day slavery, which is regulations and the things that are meant to destroy our society, like Nancy Pelosi did, amongst others, with San Francisco. And so that's what we have going on today.
And another interesting point I want to make about the founders, they let us know in the Federalist Papers that liberty forever needs to be defended against tyranny.
Yes.
This will never
yes.
end. You must remember that.
Mm-hmm. So your look at the speaker is, this is total tyranny is what you're looking at, Ava.
Of course it is. And yeah. anybody that can't see that, they're really blinded by their, you know, some kind of, I don't know, misinformation, I would say.
All right, Ava, let me throw this at you here now. You know, one of the big stories in the last many days is Mitt Romney. Let's just say that Mitt Romney, to think that he could have been the president of the United States, and of course, President Trump keeps pointing out, if he had put that in to when he was going for the presidency versus what he is trying to battle Trump, he probably would have won the race, is what Trump keeps saying, which I think really gets under the skin of Mitt Romney, amongst other things. But Mitt Romney, Ava, is sort of that pompous guy who walks into the room, you know, that's got the suit on, who thinks, as you know what, don't stink, and rolls up his cuff sleeves. And, you know, he's very prim and proper. And, you know, that's kind of the sense that people get out of Mitt Romney. Let me play this quick clip for you that the speaker talked about and how the left now is celebrating this. Many people would call him a traitor. Here you go.
So yesterday, the Senate acted, first time in history that a senator has voted against his own president in a decision regarding impeachment. God bless him for his courage. This morning, the president said, when people use faith as an excuse to do, I don't know if he said bad things, but whatever he said. It was just so completely inappropriate.
So you hear the speaker say there, the first time in history that a senator has voted against his own president on impeachment.
The worst thing in the world is a person who claims they're a Republican, and then they lie and say that they're going to vote to not impeach President Trump. And then when the vote comes up, they change their mind suddenly, last minute. Yeah, this guy here, I have a lot to say. I could do a whole show just on Mitt Romney alone. But Mitt Romney will forever be just a smudge on a page in history that nobody will pay attention to. This man is so self-centered, so smug, so full of himself. I just can't stand him. I'm sorry. It's tough.
Now, you say that there. Dr. Ron, pick up with your background of understanding politics and what Ava says about Mitt Romney. He's trying to say that he was, again, back to prayer, being prayerful, and that he really looked to his religion, and he felt that this was his conscience talking to him, that he had to do what he thought was right and really, you know, mark the president with this vote of impeachment to remove him from office. So it's a pretty serious situation there with Romney. What is behind him, Dr. Ron? I mean, he knew when he did this that he would forever mark his record and isolate himself from the conservative movement. I mean, he knew that, but yet he took a chance. What is he really up to, Dr. Ron?
Well, first of all, he hates Trump. Like few people do, because he believes that Trump stole the election from him. He doesn't take any ownership of the way he handled himself in the previous presidential election. He rolled over. He was a big wuss, and he did not understand that the American people wanted a fighter. And that's why Trump was able to overcome Romney, who's a good-looking guy, who kind of looks presidential, but he's stuck in his own narcissist bubble. So he did not get that. And this is all about his hate for Trump, and anything that he can do to undermine the president, Romney's going to do it. So he looks at that, and he looks at his anger rather than the repercussions.
And
Trump is right. He could have been president. Romney could have been president.
I have to say one thing here, too, and this is very important. Mitt Romney and George W. Bush are the ones who brought us President Trump.
Here, here. Absolutely agree.
Well, the Republican Party has, a lot of people would argue, I mean, they, and you know, we hear the word rhino out there, and we hear a lot, and Ron Edwards, you talk about that a fair amount, how a lot of the so-called, they're really not conservatives, they're more or less what you'd probably call a milquetoast moderates, I guess, in the conservative movement, or they come off as that, and that's been a problem that the Republican Party has had for a long time, Ron, and in fact, they have actually been their worst enemy. I think has been the party itself, don't you think?
Absolutely. If you are in a political party or in any kind of situation, you have to be willing to fight for your principles. If you're not, that means either you don't understand your principles or your priorities are kind of mixed. And in many cases, especially people like Romney and many others, their feet are in two camps, one in America's camp and then the other in a globalist camp.
We've never seen a guy come in and be this brazen to turn the lights on and watch all the cockroaches run like hell. And this president has absolutely done that, like him, love him, leave him. But here's the thing. When you look at, let's talk about the Democrats now and the 2020 race, guys, and Iowa. Well, first off, the Iowa caucuses, the debacle there has been truly, truly amazing. What has happened here. And so the seven top Democratic presidential candidates, they were all, first of all, there was a debate as well on Friday evening, you may or may not have seen. Well, let me go around here and ask everybody. Ava, did you see that debate?
I saw part of it. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Well, it was very interesting because one of the first things they did is they asked, who's a socialist on this stage? And the only person that did not claim to be a socialist was Amy Klobuchar. And Amy Klobuchar, actually, when you see the numbers after all of the debate and everything come out, you'll see that she was going to be the winner of that debate.
Think so?
oh, Pete Buttigieg was really hurting himself in many ways. Sometimes you let these people talk a lot on a microphone, right, and you really find out what's inside of them. That's why these debates are interesting, and I think it's important that Republicans watch them as well. Know thine enemy, okay? And yep. Biden was a complete gaffe machine. I mean, there was just word salad. You know, I mean, it was really, really something to see that these people actually think they can run this country. They're out of their minds. And let me tell you one secret, okay? All of the Democrat debate and everything now, the Iowa app, all these things that have happened, right, it's all non-essential. Because Super Tuesday, little Mike is coming in with $2 billion right, to do a leveraged buyout of the DNC. Mm. And little Mike Bloomberg will be standing on a box, and he will be spouting all of his socialist policies, and he will be the candidate.
All right. With the Iowa caucuses, Dr. Ron, what we do know at this point is this. It pretty well was a tie between Pete Buttigieg and Bernie Sanders. They were at the top at around 26%. One may be slightly ahead of the other, but basically that's it. Joe Biden came in fourth. Elizabeth Warren was in third, actually. And now you see Bloomberg coming up from the backside there.
You know, let me start out with the person that I don't think is going to make it to the end zone and right away. And I think that's Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. And I think it's Joe Biden for a couple of reasons. Number one, he's not a smart guy, and he sticks his foot in his mouth all the time. Number two, he's way too conflicted. There's way too much baggage with him and his family. Number three, he's running out of money. Number four, Barack Obama has not supported him. The only thing that could possibly save Joe Biden, and this type of thing worries me, is this talk about him inviting Michelle Obama as his vice presidential candidate. If that happens, things could really go sideways, and he could raise up in the polls. I don't think when things are ultimately determined, people are going to go for an avowed socialist like Bernie Sanders. They may look at Buttigieg only because of all the voices out there, and this is a stretch, but of all the voices out there, he seems to be the most moderate, but he's the least experienced. So I tell you, I think we're still early in this thing, but I think Biden will definitely not be the presidential candidate for the Democratic
Party. Do you think the United States is ready for a gay president, Dr. Ron?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think they are, for a couple of reasons. Some people just want to, you know, push a ticket, right? Let's get the first this in or the first that. It's not the quality of the individual. It's what looks politically correct. But look, the guy, I mean, let's look at it. Buttigieg is the mayor of a city that's got, what, 100,000 people to it? And he wants to be the leader of the free world. I mean, he is so far out of his sandbox. It's ridiculous. But most of the American public are not very educated, and they're fairly disengaged. And I think if you take a look at the very low turnout in the Iowa caucuses, that's a message to the Democratic Party. If you look at how many people Trump got to his rallies in the state, and you did a per capita compare and contrast, oh, the Republicans were way ahead of the Democrats and people showing up on a cold, wintry night to listen to a candidate.
Many people are calling this probably the most successful week of the Trump presidency. Kind of hard to imagine when, you know, you've got an impeachment that came to a head there. And it rattles the mind where we find ourselves right now. But it's been called here, this latest story as well, the Friday Night Massacre is what some are calling it here. And certainly the MSNs and CNNs and the Times and all that, that's what they are calling it. And that is that President Trump, he had fired the two major impeachment witnesses and the brother. And these are the prominent fact witnesses in the impeachment investigation, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, you might recall, and Gordon Sondland there. They were fired about 48 hours. And of course, the media had an aneurysm, basically, because there was a lot of conversation, the president can't do that, what is he doing? And a lot of this comes down, people, to the fact that the president really has the right to have whoever he wants in the White House. That is, he is the executive, and that is the executive branch. And so as they continue to try to find reasons to find fault with the president, clearly every administration picks the people they want around him. This is part and parcel, part of the problem this administration has had, quite frankly, and that is having too many deep state heroes in there that are against policy. You know, you've got to remember one other thing here. These people are not supposed to create policy. They're supposed to just administer the policy that the president puts forth. One of the biggest challenges that you might have seen from the whole impeachment debacle is how many of these people thought they should be running the show and thought that their opinion is what mattered, not the president. Who the hell is he? It is very odd, the whole juxtaposition of this conversation. But the president has decided to clean house a little bit. And it is a bit of a chuckle, obviously. I think you'll be seeing more heads roll in the days and weeks ahead, is what I will predict to you here as well. And then when you take a look at the economy, wow, wow, wow. Employers added 225,000 jobs in January. The unemployment rate is at 3.6%. And, you know, with all that said, you got to love the headlines. I love this headline in the New York Times. The election year economy is everything Trump could hope for, was the headline. But then the subhead to that is, even if presidents have less sway over the economy than is widely assumed, perception can be important. These are the same cats who would be cutting the president a new one had the economy been anywhere near the tank, people, which I just find it quite ironic how it becomes less important when the economy is, you know, becoming the talk, the real story here that the media has tried their damnedest to ignore, avoid, sidestep, and completely ignore. We're going to get into a couple of stories right next again with Dr. Ron Martinelli and Ron Edwards about some of the stories they've written that are up on the platform. But I encourage you to go to the platform and share all of the information on there. There are great columns from international writers and bloggers, a great show host, and it is quite a place, actually. It's a place you can feel comfortable. You can come and not feel threatened and just feel at home. And that's our goal here for you, is to feel we are a resource. Help us get the word out there. Share. All of the great stories, all of the great podcasts. Everything goes to podcast after it's heard on America Out Loud Talk Radio. As we continue on here, let me just tell you a little bit of background here on Dr. Ron Martinelli. He's a retired police detective, a forensic criminologist, and he's host of Talking While Married with his co-host, Linda Martinelli. It's a great show that plays 8 p.m. on America Out Loud Network here. And to speak about political, life, cultural, everything that's important to you can be heard right there. I want to tell you a little bit, too, about Ron Edwards. Ron is a columnist here at America Out Loud. He's a national talk show host. You'll also hear Ron's voice on our network every day. It's a 90-second feature we call the Edwards Notebook, and he puts it out there in a very succinct way. You'll enjoy those spots. They make you think. And that's what it's all about at the end of the day, people, is to make you think here. And, of course, also, we save the best for last always, and that's Ava Armstrong. I think both Dr. Ron and Ron Edwards would agree with that, I think. And Ava is a political commentator. She's a radio personality. But more than that, she's a best-selling author. All of her books are on Amazon, and they more so are on the bookstore at America Out Loud. We have a great bookstore. You can get that link right on the navigation bar on AmericaOutLoud.com. You'll also find Dr. Ron Martinelli's book up there, up on the bookstore. Please check that out as well. We have a lot of great authors and just a lot of spirited people here on the platform. So there's a lot of great talent around here. I want to get back now, and I want to talk to, as we continue on here, to our esteemed panel here. And I want to talk to you about this coronavirus. This is another major, major story. Is the coronavirus that is, it's interesting. There's a lot still unknown about this virus. Let me put that out there as well. Researchers are saying that it shares similarities to the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, MERS, you might recall, and the Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome, SARS, you may recall those. Those were two very much infectious diseases that had, in recent decades, that had been managed, but that were very concerning. This one here, we do not have the proper vaccination for this yet. They say that could be about a year away. In the meantime, the numbers are amazing. And as I bring Dr. Ron in here to talk about the coronavirus here, let me say this to you here. And first of all, a couple of stats I want you to understand, people. And this is interesting to me. And some of this I didn't know. I've learned myself for the first time as well. But there are as many as 5 million severe cases of flu. Not just talking about everyday flu, people. You know, you get the flu. We all have gotten it from one time or another. We think nothing about it. And so there are as many as 5 million severe cases of flu worldwide every single year. And I didn't realize this as well, but there are 650,000 deaths from that flu. Now, you know, really, Dr. Ron, that itself would consider to be, could almost be a pandemic when you talk at the everyday flu. But here's what's happening with this coronavirus. The problem, I think, that's scaring people is we don't know a lot about it. Whereas we know they have the flu shots and the others, which are controversial as well. But the numbers here are staggering. It just about 5, 6, 7 days ago, the numbers were about 6,000 infected, about 130 dead coming out of China. Those numbers now are escalated. It seems to be doubling every 48 hours. And the numbers now that we know of, Dr. Ron, are about 700 plus. And the plus, 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 we just don't know the numbers because it's changing so rapidly. How concerned should we be in this coronavirus?
As a medical investigator, I've done my statistical homework for you, Malcolm. And I'm going to tell you that currently you're correct. There's about 40,000 cases worldwide and about 724 deaths so far. We've got about 2,400 recoveries. I personally think that China is underreporting these deaths, but the deaths are steadily going upwards. It's almost it's almost a vertical rise. And but let's just put this in perspective. Now, I'm already saying that this is a serious virus, is something that could become a pandemic, but let's put it in perspective in the United States. So far in the United States, we've only had 12 reported cases throughout the United States, and we've got zero deaths. So let's compare and contrast this to what we saw, and these statistics all come from the Center for Disease Control. We had, as of the 1st of February, we've had 10,000 cases. But in 2018 and 2019, with influenza, we had, between 2018 and 2019, 34,200 deaths.
Wow.
We had 16.5 million hospital visits and 490,600 hospital visits. That was last year. This year so far, we've had 22,000. And by the way, when we talk about this year, we're talking about the influenza cycle, which actually starts in October. Remember, okay, that's when we start getting our flu shots and our pneumonia shots. So from October 1st of last year to currently, we've had between 22 million and 31 million flu illnesses reported. We've had 15 million hospital visits, and we've had 12,000 deaths. Okay, 12,000 deaths during this flu season, as compared to,
but yet I don't hear anybody talking about this, Dr. Ron. Why is that? Why is that not ever really? I mean, you never hear anything about that.
Well, because Malcolm, the scariness of coronavirus, and I'm not saying again we shouldn't be scared about it. We should be scared, you know, about every single virus that we don't know a lot about that has pandemic possibilities.
Right.
But that isn't driving the news.
The thing about coronavirus that I find very worrying is that for 2 weeks, the person that has the virus does not realize that they have it.
Absolutely.
Yet they can pass that virus on. The regular flu, like the H1N1 and all of that, you have symptoms right away. You're sneezing, you're coughing, you get a temperature right away. The minute you get that flu virus works very quickly in you. The coronavirus is much different. It's almost like it's a virus that is transmitted, but you have no idea that you even have it.
Yeah, see, there's a lot of questions is what it is. And I know Dr. Ron Martinelli's biting his tongue right now. He'd probably have a lot to say about that, but let's move it along here. And I want to talk about the NFL next here. And now we'll get you to unbite your tongue, Dr. Ron Martinelli, because this is your article, your column here. And it's very interesting what you've got here. Let me set the tone here real quickly. Today's NFL, first the knee taken and now the lies. It's a very, very interesting read, as all of Dr. Ron's are on the platform here. And friends, if you watch the Super Bowl, as millions and millions of people did, the commercial, there was a commercial that was sponsored by the NFL. And I did see the commercial, Dr. Ron, and the commercial was from a new organization called the Players Coalition. Now, why it got my attention, by the way, amongst all the others, and I didn't know this was even being played, but I happened to see it, is the subject of the commercial was police brutality of black men, featuring an officer-involved shooting of a black man identified as Corey Jones in Florida in 2015. And Jones was not killed by a white police officer, but a minority officer. But they just simply forgot to tell you that in the commercial. So they did a commercial to try to dramatize the fact that, again, police brutality, black men, so on and so forth. Let's talk about what's the real point of this story that you're putting out there, Dr. Ron? What's the takeaway that people need to know? And how guilty is the NFL for propagating a lot of this garbage?
Well, I have to tell you that ever since Colin Kaepernick and other NFL athletes took a knee, I completely boycotted the NFL. I think they have capitulated to the players. And so what is the Players Coalition? It's co-founded by a former NFL player from the Baltimore Ravens. His name is Aquan Bolden, and he happened to be the cousin of Corey Jones. Now, with full disclosure, that was a bad officer-involved shooting. And you know, one of the things that I do primarily in my practice is investigate officer-involved shootings, but from all different directions, criminally, civilly, you know, all of that. So I've got no dog in the fight. I'm a forensic expert, so it the science doesn't lie. Mm-hmm. And that's a bad shooting. And the person that that killed Corey Jones, the officer who was fired immediately and then prosecuted, and I think he's doing 25 years in prison in Florida, was not a white man, okay? He was a minority officer. But when you go onto the Players Union website, and this is what I found so troubling. First of all, what I found troubling with all the problems that we have in police community relations, many of which are driven by people like Kaepernick and Black Lives Matter. When you go onto the Players Coalition website, all of the statistics that they give you are completely inaccurate, non-sourced, and non-vetted. And so that ought to worry a lot of people. The next thing is that they're outright lies and misrepresentations. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to give you a little bit of their information and then tell you what the truth is. And, you know, I wrote extensively about this in my very popular book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. And they say, and according to the Players Union, they say that black men are 3.5 more times likely to be shot and 3 times more likely to be killed by police. Okay, but that's totally inaccurate. And the real statistics are that black men, we lose one black person a year compared to every 173,000 blacks. So in a population of black men that comprise only 6.5 of the population of the United States of America, out of 173,000 black men walking around on the street, one black man is shot and killed by police. Okay, so that's really important to know. Police officers working the street, we've got about 500,000. There are 900,000 law enforcement officers in the United States, and about half of those guys work the street. They literally make tens of millions of contacts with the public every single year. And out of all those tens of millions of contacts, only 2% ever result in any use of force, let alone deadly force. This sort of gives you, you know, a little bit of the background. And in the stats that I mentioned in the book from 2009 to 2012, so over 4 years, 32% of all the people that were shot and killed by police, of which there were 1,491, were blacks, 32%, but 61% were white. So the first statistic that they give out is patently false. So, and that's compared to, 2,700 blacks die every year in car accidents and 2,500 die by suicide every year, Malcolm.
So what? So you believe they're tainting the statistics? This is an agenda-driven propaganda campaign, then, is what you're suggesting, Dr. Ron, right?
Absolutely, Malcolm. Blacks are 35 times more likely to be killed by other blacks. Okay, the 35 times more, and they're 21 times more likely to be killed in self-defense shootings, of which the majority of shooters are blacks. Okay, so literally the chance of a black man being shot and killed by police is less than being struck by lightning, statistically.
Ron Edwards, what do you say to some of those stats as a black man yourself? What do you say to that? Do you see the numbers of what Dr. Ron puts out there? And what is behind all of this, do you think?
Well, the man that Dr. Ron is telling the absolute truth. I've read many of those same statistics. And as an American who happens to be black, I find it kind of embarrassing because so many Americans, and even in both parties, refuse to look at the real problem when it comes to black men in this country. The truth is, blacks are killing blacks. Black mothers are not raising their sons or daughters in the correct manner. They have been totally duped by the leftist way of thinking. And the black family has been destroyed, and therefore, that's by design. And so you have these negative statistics. Blacks are killing blacks. You had the U.S. Justice Department under the Ali Obama administration coming down hard on police departments, like in my hometown in Cleveland, where they were really shutting down a lot of these black thugs who were moving into downtown and trying to, it's like they were trying to purposely set back the progress that city has been making by attacking tourists and things of that nature. And they were really cutting things down. And here comes the Justice Department making them go to these phony classes, they're telling them to kiss the backsides of criminals and don't do anything. And so now you have a problem throughout America, Chicago and elsewhere. There's no fear anymore of the police department. And so you have these people, look how many black thugs are attacking even whites. Remember the knockout game? They would walk up to people, didn't care if they were elderly or not, and bam, knock them out.
Yeah.
No real repercussions. So Dr. Ron, thank you for being willing to tell the truth. I'm happy. It's the truth that'll set us free, and we have to continue to tell it so that people can learn, and maybe we can rebuild our society based on the truth and cut this madness out.
All right, Ron Edwards, you have a very interesting column this week, and being this month that it is Black History Month, and you say here, the title, A Reluctant Look at Black History Month, and you said right up front, I'm reluctant to focus on Black History Month because I pray that the teaching of the complete history of our achievers will one day be the rule rather than the annual February fake inclusion that few give a damn about. And you say here, you don't mince your words, we just love you here, but Black History Month as it is currently utilized is counterproductive. The truth is, great black Americans, especially the men who routinely not taught about it in schools like they used to long before black American history was enacted. What's the core of this article and what's the message you're trying to get out there?
Well, the core of the article is just to point out the hypocrisy of Black History Month. I was warned when I was a little boy, my dad told me, he said Black History Month is going to have a very negative impact. It is going to open the door to other movements in this country that are going to be negative. Now you have June that has been used to be the wedding month between man and woman. Now it has been displaced by you know what. You guys know that when we were little kids going to school, you heard about people like Crispus Attucks, you heard about Frederick Douglass and others. Well, they purposely have expunged these individuals, especially people like Madam C.J. Walker, who was the first female millionaire, not first black female millionaire, but the first female millionaire. And Lewis Latimer, he was the one who perfected the filament so that Thomas Edison's invention would work beyond a few moments, the light bulb. And so how best to destroy a people than to convince them that you haven't done anything? And then you have this little garbage, you know, Black History Month that everyone says, oh, okay. Okay, here's Black History Month. Okay, we mentioned a few names, and then let's hurry up and get through it, and then it's back to nothing. This is infuriating. The left has continuing to espouse misinformation or no information when it comes to the truth. And that is because how best to destroy a population than to make them feel that they never achieved anything, you're about nothing, you never were about anything, and you never will be anything. Mm-hmm. America is against you, you cannot achieve, and you have a population of bitter individuals who are so brainwashed that they can become a multimillionaire quarterback in the National Football League and then turn around and say that I'm oppressed. Now, how asinine is that?
Well, people can read the full article there, the column, A Reluctant Look at Black History Month is on America Out Loud, as well as the NFL, today's NFL, first the knee taken and now the lies there, are both on AmericaOutLoud.com. You hear the voices. I mean, they're strong. You have to appreciate the passion of Ron Edwards, Dr. Ron Martinelli, and Ava Armstrong, and that's what we're about here, people. It's bringing that passion to the microphone and sharing the good word with each of you here. I got a very interesting guest I want you to meet next for me. I'll be meeting her for the first time, as you will be as well. She's a teenager from Germany. Many people are calling her the antidote to that Greta Thunberg you've been hearing so much about on the climate change business that the left has really embraced for a lot of reasons. But this is a very young lady, Naomi, you'll meet in just moments. And labeling beliefs as Nazi or right-wing extremists, it's going to be an interesting talk just ahead there. Stay right there, friends, as Viewpoint rolls on.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutLoud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Welcome back to Viewpoint, friends, and I would like you to meet next a very interesting young lady here. She's a 19-year-old from Germany. You may have heard of her, in fact, Naomi Seid. She calls herself really a libertarian climate realist. What's interesting about Naomi is she talks about a lot of things, both political and human behavior and climate, and a lot of really cool subject matter here. She publishes a lot of YouTube videos. They're very, very good. She speaks from the heart. She's been doing work with the Heartland Institute, and I think you will fall in love with her. And welcome to the program, Naomi.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
It is absolutely a pleasure. And I'd like to play for our listeners right now a brief segment here of you from one of your YouTube videos that I found most engaging here. And so let me play that right now.
Coming out can still be a very tough thing to do. However, I'm not talking about coming out as gay, but coming out as non-leftist, coming out as conservative, or libertarian even. Coming out as a voter for a specific party or supporter of particular people in the political sphere. Coming out as a harsh critic of the migration crisis, the welfare state, or coming out as a climate change skeptic. People like us tend to be shunned as evil and heartless immediately.
a lot of times we're seeing that people are being called out. If you have a certain belief structure, or you are, you know, like you're being heartless, you're not compassionate, you're a Nazi, you're a xenophobe, you're a racist, you're a right-wing extremist. What's behind all this, Naomi? Why are people doing this?
Well, I used to not have any controversial political beliefs at all because I wasn't political when I was younger. I disliked politics. I thought it was very boring. And I still to this day think that politicians are mostly just boring. But what I do like to concern myself with now is political philosophy and, as you've already said, climate change. So there's also a lot of science that I'm interested in. But as we all know, even science has become so politicized. And once I started developing some political beliefs, some ideals, and I started following people on YouTube that inspired me to keep researching, and I also became interested in economics, especially the Austrian economics. And so I realized for myself that I probably can identify with the label libertarian, and libertarian climate realist, if you will. Right. And I started getting a lot of backlash from friends, from family, and, well, everyone around me. And at first I was very surprised, but after a while I realized there is something going on here. This is not just my social circle, but in fact, most people are very opposed to the ideas that I have and to the views that I want to share with the world. And they were calling me rude and mean and a narcissist for being against socialism. And I was shocked because, as you know, socialism has caused a lot of damage in this world. But I wanted to fight against exactly that. And I wanted to fight for freedom of speech and for more freedom in general. But nobody seemed to understand that. The problem that we have is that people don't identify socialism with authoritarianism or totalitarianism, but they associate socialism and restriction of freedom of speech. They associate all of that with welfare and with helping the world, with helping the planet. And so if you are a climate skeptic or climate realist, then they see you as the devil. They see you as someone who wants to destroy the planet, who doesn't want to share with others, who wants to ruin nature, kill animals. They have a very distorted view of us. And they don't want to listen to us because they think that they're talking to evil people. So they don't want to have any conversation in the first place, making it especially hard for us.
So what they're doing is they're putting a label on you right away and labeling you something that you're not, which is what people do when they don't really have an answer back for the argument. Don't you find that's the truth there, Naomi?
Exactly, that's very true. And I know that especially on the topic of climate change, there are so many people and, particularly younger people who have never looked into the science at all, but they just believe that what they've been told by Greta and the mainstream media is correct. So we need to save the planet by not using plastic straws, for example, which is ridiculous if you think about the bigger picture. And so they don't want to listen to scientific arguments from the other side because they know they can't respond to them, of course.
Right. So, well, then what happens is they use the emotional string, which is really, Naomi, what the far left has done very well over the millennia. They tend to use those emotional strings to pull at humanity. And it does get a little warped. You're 100% right. And it goes against many of our ideals. All right. So what's really interesting that I think people are listening now and picking up from you, which I found fascinating in your story, and I did not know what you shared with us a moment ago, that as a young lady, when you were younger in your teen years, I'm assuming that's around 13, 14, 15, 16. So you used to be a climate change alarmist and you used to believe in a lot of the hysteria. But when you started studying and applying your, and this is just, I'm assuming you applying your own ability to look at facts and data and understand, because it doesn't sound like anybody sat you down to really teach you. You went ahead and found what you thought were the truths. And then when you started to speak about that, I think you're saying your circle of friends and family and those that influence you were, are you saying they were outraged with how you felt or how you were different than them?
Oh, yes, definitely. I used to have a very good relationship with everyone in my family and my extended family as well. And I had good relationships with friends. But once I started questioning a few political topics, and especially climate change, I think that was a big one. Because if you're a climate skeptic, they call you a climate denier. And that, especially in Germany, is a very, very heavy term, because of course we have to we always have to remember that Germans used to be the Nazis, and we can't afford to be called Holocaust deniers. And so if you're referred to as a climate denier, that puts you in one basket with the Holocaust deniers, which is absolutely disgusting, because it really reduces the severity of the Holocaust, if you ask me. But yeah, that's the reaction that I got, basically, from so many people that I used to be close with. They saw me as evil.
Now, and by looking at what, that's interesting. I mean, they were looking at the historical implications of this topic, and it puts you really at a very funny position. Are those relationships still strained today, or have they recovered?
Well, I got back together with a couple of friends, and I asked them to listen to me again, and we managed to have some conversations, but I know for sure that our relationship will never be the same again. I will never be such good friends.
You weren't able to convince them. You weren't able to totally convince them to this other side, huh?
No, because we had to agree on not talking about politics at all. They don't want to talk about those topics at all anymore, because they know that it would lead to the same outcome.
Naomi, that's the same problem that families and friends are having throughout this country as well. It is ironic, mm-hmm. isn't it, now, where families and friends have been divided. And it's really kind of sick, actually, that we can't respect our opinions and our thoughts and still be civil and friendly toward each other is pretty amazing to me. There's something lost with all of this on humanity that is so sick and is tearing us apart as a society. You know, what's really interesting, Naomi, that you and I have so much to talk about in the future here, is, as you know, there's a lot of talk all of a sudden in America about socialism. It's very weird, because as a young boy growing up myself, it was like, it was a conversation we never really had. You know, when you talked about communism or socialism, it was like, oh my God, it was like the most anti thing you could ever talk about. And certainly not in America here, you know, Naomi, I mean, come on, you know, I mean, not in the
land, of course.
Right. Not in the land of the free and the home of the, not here. But yet there's candidates in the Democratic Party, and there's others that are now really pushing a brand of socialism, a.k.a. communism or a.k.a. Marxism. And they've really sort of branded that as the Democrat way. What do you say to all that? How doesn't it seem weird that history is sort of repeating itself in an odd sort of way?
Absolutely. But what I do have to say is that in Germany, socialism was never such a negatively connotated term. And I remember that in high school, I had a teacher who referred to herself as a socialist. She was a politics teacher, mm-hmm. and she called herself a socialist. So it really is totally acceptable to be a socialist in Germany.
Yeah, isn't that funny, though, how that one word can be tainted and then be celebrated in the other way, huh? It's
interesting. Oh, yes. It's absolutely horrible.
I know. That's funny.
The way we downplay even the worst events in history. Right. And I know for sure that if we weren't careful, the same could happen with National Socialism.
That's right. So bottom line, a lot of this talk out there, it seems to be that the left is using this, or let me ask you that question. Are they using this, do you believe, as a power grab Are they using this to manipulate the masses? Are they using this to seek the power, fame, and fortune that they are after? Is that the role here?
Yes, absolutely. I know that, of course, some of them just do this to not respond to certain questions because they know they can't, and because they get so emotional whenever you trigger them with one of those political subjects. But yes, I do think that most of them are seeking some kind of dominance over the political sphere and the public controversy. So they want to have the moral high ground basically shut us off from everyone else and, have the occupy the entire mainstream.
Yeah, it's ironic. I'm listening to you talk right now, and so much is going through my mind, Naomi. It's like, you know, we are free loving people. We love all people. We love all opinions and thoughts, and yet somehow we're the bad guys, you know?
Yes, and that's why it's important that we keep emphasizing that we are fighting for freedom and free speech. We are not anti-Greta. We are not anti-climate change, but we have our own pros.
We are anti-socialism and we are anti-Marxism, aren't we, though?
Yes, of course we are. But we have to make sure to tell people because they think that socialism is something positive. So we have to make sure to stress that we are not anti-social, but anti-totalitarianism. And then we have to explain. Step two is to explain, but totalitarianism is socialism, in fact.
Yeah. Naomi, you are an absolute delight. Are you still in school, by the way?
Oh, no. I finished high school almost 3 years ago. I was very young when I got out of school because I skipped first grade. So I was 16 when I graduated from school.
Wow. What does the future hold for you? What are your plans?
Well, I wanted to, at first I wanted to study economics in Germany, but in fact, it is very, I would say, indoctrinated, and it's become very socialist in Germany, even studying economics at university, and it was a good university. Right now, I'm mostly doing my work, as you know, for the Hartland Institute on YouTube, and as well as giving speeches all over the world. I have some projects planned for 2020 to fight for freedom of speech. That's important to me right now.
Yeah. Well, friends, you're listening there to Naomi Zeit, and we will put a link to her YouTube video, the one I referenced, right in the post when this goes to the front page and to podcast networks worldwide on AmericaOutloud.com. I would predict to you right here today, this will not be the last time you hear from this young woman, and I believe you will hear from her many times again on America Out Loud, I am certain almost. But it is a pleasure indeed to talk to you, Naomi, and a joy to bring your voice to this platform here. Friends, it has been a pleasure to be with you today on Viewpoint this Sunday. We thank you again for being part of the journey. Now, remember, it's all back at AmericaOutloud.com, and we'll keep it burning there, and you keep doing your part and share the good news out there. It's time to get involved and get loud.